Hello, and welcome to It's All About Choices. This is the show where my guest and I discuss our lives and our careers, framed through the choices we've made, the good choices and the bad choices. My name is David Barrow, and for those of you that don't know me, I've been working in information technology service-related roles for coming up to 29 years. 2023 will mark my 30th year in the workplace. Now, those years have really flown by, and as I approach that 30-year milestone, I've decided now is a good time to reflect on the choices that I've made that have led me up to today. I do this not just for myself, but because I think it would be great to share these experiences in order to help others on their career journeys who may face similar choices to those I and my guests have faced, or indeed we will face. I'll explore my choices and those of my network of colleagues, customers, mentors, and great friends. These are people who are willing to share their experiences via the choices they've made during their lives and careers in IT or in other industries. Now, each episode of It's All About Choices will begin with a period on my own journey, and my guest will be somebody I first met at that time. My guest today is Derek Kelly. Derek and I first met and worked together in the late 1990s, and I'm going to plump for 1998. That was around a period where I would make a choice that would change my life, a choice that was discussed in episode 2, where I spoke with my help desk manager of that time, Mariana Herhold. Marion was managing IBM's largest UK help desk of that time, and she was building a team in London. I myself joined from Manchester, but this team was coming from all over the place, and that includes today's guest, Derek. Now, at one time, it seemed as though Derek and I would follow a very similar paths with our careers in IBM. Our careers crossed over for a good 5 or 6 years. But ultimately, our mutual choices would lead us in different directions. So today, Derek and I will discuss the choices that led to us working together, and the choices that have led Derek to today, and the choices that we plan to make to shape the future. As we speak, you are more than welcome to ask questions via YouTube or LinkedIn, and we'll do our best to cover them. And although we've kept in touch, Derek and I have not really had the opportunity to have a conversation for the best part of 20 years. So I'm really looking forward to this chat. Derek, welcome to It's All About Choices.
Hi, Dave, and thanks for inviting me. Really pleased to get a chance to have a chat with you today.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. I know it was a bit of a bolt out of the blue to say, do you mind coming and talking to me about your career and your choices for what seems like an awful long time? But I know there's, we've got some interesting synergy in the early parts of our careers. Hopefully I recall correctly that we met in 1998. I think it was 98,
yeah.
99.
Yeah, it was the good old Brentford help desk. So I think
that's it.
Everyone involved in that team's got fond memories of that. They were a good few years.
They were. And you know what, that was the kind of the biggest challenge of me putting this together was who to ask and who, you know, because there's so many people we could have a whole, I could just spend probably, I don't know, 20 episodes just on that help desk because there were so many great people on there. Yeah. But I recall from a career perspective that you and I joined at the same time, and then for 5 or 6 years in IBM, we were kind of on the same trajectory, career path, so to speak. But I don't think my memory is as good as it used to be, but I'd love to know what choices you made that actually led to you turning up at that help desk at the same time as me.
Yeah, so that was sort of one of my big career choices. So I left school, went straight into work, and did a few jobs that I wanted that I could pick up at the time. I didn't go to university, and one of my career ambitions at the start was to be Quincy from the TV, the forensic scientist. One of the jobs I was targeting was a forensic scientist. The forensics teams within the Met Police, where the crime scene investigators, they go there, collect all the evidence. And when I first left school at 16, I applied for the course, but it was a 4-year course, and they were They thought I was too young to make that decision at the time. So they told me to go and get some other jobs and come back when I was a bit older, and they considered me then. So I got a work in the civil service with the Met Police. So just before IBM, I was a crime pattern analyst in Hackney Police Station. And my job was to get the details of burglaries and robberies, put them up on a big map, and try to work out patterns which would lead to light improvement ideas. So you might improve the lighting, or you might put patrols in a particular area and find patterns as with burglaries, because one of the interesting things was, like, your burglars are quite habitual, so they don't really go too far from their house. So if you get a cluster, you could see the burglar probably lives in there somewhere. So interesting things like that. But there was no IT in Met Police at that time, and they were just starting to introduce it. So what they asked me to do was to help them train the police officers to move from paper-based crime records into computer-based crime records. So I helped that, helped them with the training. I found an interest and an attitude for IT. And that was probably my first big choice, because I was working in the civil service, but IT was very private sector and dynamic. And in the civil service, it was progression. Progression was just how long you'd been there. There wasn't too many avenues to jump up based on sort of initiative desire. You couldn't really, there was no fast path track to progress. You had to just play the game and do the years, and you'd progress that way. So that was my big first decision, really, where I wanted to be a bit more dynamic, and I wanted to move a bit faster than that path was taking me. So I looked for the biggest IT company I could find to apply for jobs, so that I had loads of scope to work out what I wanted to do. And IBM were recruiting for help desk analysts in Brentford, so I applied for the job, and I came across as a they call it an experienced hire, and I came into the help desk via that route, because I'd had other jobs related to IT. So I came in Brentford that way, but I jumped from civil service, which was very rigid, into big company like IBM, which had quite dynamic, and there was loads of stuff going on. So that was a big jump for me. That was the first real big career change choice, really.
That's massive. I mean, it's funny now you're talking about it, I kind of recall now, remember that you were doing that prior to joining. That is a huge jump, isn't it? It's funny because in a previous episode, I was speaking with an old colleague, Zaf, and we came from really different ways. He came from university. I came, similar to yourself, like just straight out of education into the workplace. But then your leap is, I was always in IT. Your leap is that you were doing something completely different, and then you come in and do that. And it's amazing how technology is the hook that kind of brought you in, I guess. How do you reflect on that choice? Do you ever wonder what might have been, that you could have been Quincy, that you could have been at CSI Miami or whatever, or is it something that now that's it, it's gone, and you're good the way you are?
I'm happy with how it's gone. I'm pleased with the choice. You never know how that those sliding door moments would have turned out. I suppose the opportunities and would have been different structure, different type of thing. But I think overall, I prefer to be in IT than I would have been in sort of crime and that element of it. I think that path would have been far more mentally stressful than IT, even though we moan about our jobs at times. That's a tough path to be doing sort of type work.
And do you think over time, because one of the reasons that I wanted to set up this kind of series of conversations was to help people that are at some way, shape or form making their own choice. Do you think the choice at the time was massive, and over time, you've kind of reduced in your mind because you're very happy doing what you're doing? Or was it a simple choice to make at that age and level of experience?
I suppose at that time we would have been, I was fairly young, would have been early 20s. So I was full of energy, enthusiasm, and I was feeling a bit restricted by the rigid structure within the civil service. So I think it was the right choice for me at the time, because in IBM, you know, in any sort of company like that, if you've got sort of energy and ideas and stuff like that, you know, in IBM, we were lucky enough that a lot of the time we were given enough sort of scope and freedom to go with ideas and develop things and develop ourselves. You know, there was training opportunities, and if, you know, if you showed the right sort of aptitude and attitude, then you were given opportunities to do things. And one of the, you know, the best parts of that decision I made is all the opportunities I've got in IBM to work across. And in the teams that we were in, you know, we got to work across all of the different sectors. We were really lucky where we could jump in to an account in a pharmaceutical sector for a couple of months and help them improve, and then jump across to another client in a finance sector and then help them improve and understand, you know, the different influences that their sector had on their business and how we adapted processes based on that. So, you know, the wealth of opportunities I had in IBM to jump about a bit and learn in the same job, you know, was fantastic. And I'm not sure I would have had the same in the public sector with it being more rigid.
I agree. I remember speaking when I spoke with Marion on the last episode, I was saying that was either the first time or the first time I was able to understand that I was being given an element of freedom to actually push myself and do some different things and take accountability, as well as have the opportunity to create improvement. And I think some of that was down to Marion's leadership style, and then Nick thereafter, who'll be on another episode. But I think you're so right about IBM. I work as a consultant now, and I think IBM gave me the ability to land somewhere and be able to hold a series of conversations that would give me enough information to be able to get on and do and add value almost immediately. But IBM gave me the tools to do that. And I still knew, you know, I left IBM 17 years ago, but I still use those tools today. And I think you're absolutely right. People like ourselves, really everybody on that team, I think everybody's gone on to do some incredible things. And I think, yeah, we owe a lot to that help desk being formed in Brentford in the late 90s, that's for sure. I've also just had a message here from Martin, an old colleague of mine at Capgemini, just reflecting that you and he have a similar background. Martin's a really good guy. We work together with HMRC. So we were on that help desk for, if memory serves me correctly, through to, I think, sort of 2002-ish, 2001, 2002.
Yeah.
And then we took slightly separate directions, didn't we? I went off and worked with American Express in Brighton. Yeah. You took a couple of choices then, didn't you, and moved on out of that help desk. What did you do then?
Yeah, so I was starting to decide where to develop into IT, and I always think that service desk is always the best place to start in IT, because you get to have a look at it from the start, and you can see how issues progress, sort of all the different teams, different technologies, and it all starts from that, or mainly starts from that first call into the service desk. So that's always a great place to start, sort of in my view, and that would be one of the things I would say to anyone looking for a career in IT: start in the help desk, because you learn so much. But I liked sort of the process side. I was starting to develop my interest in the process side. So I went to a service management role. So I went to first be a service manager and then the change manager at Thompson Holidays, which was one of our clients. So I was working at Thompson Holidays in Camden. It was a small little team. There was mainly a mainframe account, but yeah, I was service manager, then change manager. And then after that, I think that's when we came back to work more directly together, where we joined Clive's service management transformation team.
That's right, at DEFRA. So you were back into civil service.
Yeah.
Or indirectly at least. I remember, yeah, so I think I was working maybe on major incident and problem, and you were working on change And I can't remember what else, apologies, but yeah, we were definitely writing and implementing those processes, weren't we, on that client site?
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I found that to be, from my perspective, an interesting choice, because that was, I think, the first time in my case that I'd kind of taken over a team. And I took over a really great team, but they'd all Tupi'd in from DEFRA. So then I had to learn about Tupi, sort of get to understand the politics and the dynamics around that, and understand even employment contracts, because they were different to ours.
Yeah.
And that was the first time, you know, I'd kind of had to start to think at that level. You know, so no longer was it just process. It was people and managing people. Do you have any recollections of your time, you know, in those first few years where you think, okay, that's something that I could have made a better choice, or was it all fairly plain sailing up to that point?
Fairly plain sailing, I think. I think we were quite lucky where there was lots of opportunities around us, and it was more about, you know, what do we fancy doing, rather than outsourcing was, I think, was the flavor of the decade at that sort of time. You know, there was lots of big growth in those sorts of areas, and there was lots, and IBM had a rich portfolio of clients across lots of different sectors, and it was fairly easy to move between them. But I think, yeah, I did like having that freedom of working in a central team and working across multiple clients rather than working on one. But that I sort of reversed, well, or later on in my career, I now prefer, I've got a single client, and I prefer that at the moment, because what I found was when we were doing our work in Clive's team, we would work with them for a short period of time, build relationships, put in some improvement actions, but never actually got to see the rewards of the work we've done. We'd move on to somewhere else, and you know, you wouldn't see the improvement yourself, or you wouldn't experience the improvement yourself, because you move off to do something else. And now, when I work on I'm dedicated to one client, the improvements we put in place, I see, and the whole thing gets better, and I'm part of the better delivery as well. So it's a flip, really. I don't get to jump across different clients and have different sorts of problems, but I benefit from having that longer term relationship.
I think somebody said to me the other day, there are the roles where you get the cake. So that's when it's all done and it's all kicking off and it's improving. And they're the roles where you start the process to get the cake, but you don't actually get to eat the cake at the end. And I think we were non-cake eaters at that point. Yes. And which in my case would probably account for a lot, to be perfectly honest now. And I think that's probably then, it's a good point. I'm just going to show some Martin's just alerted me to the fact that he was also with IBM for 10 years, which actually would explain a lot about our time working together at Capgemini, because we fought along the same lines. And I probably knew that 14 years ago when I was working at Capgemini, but again, memories betrayed me. But I think that's the point then where really, since that point, we've not worked together. So I actually made a choice where I went and worked in banking, in finance.
Yeah.
For the very reason that you just said then, I wanted to go and eat the cake, essentially. I wanted to go and work somewhere where I could. And I think maybe I think about this too logically now. I doubt I was so logically minded then, if I'm perfectly honest. But I wanted to go somewhere where I could see the fruits of my labor and test myself. And boy, was that a test. And I'll come to that in a future episode, moving from IBM, where it's fairly ordered. There's lots of opportunity, but it's, you know, you've got great guidance all around you and great intellectual capital to working in banking, where there's not too much of that and it's all on your shoulders. But that's one for another day. And but yeah, that's where we then took separate paths, and you remained at IBM from that point then, didn't you? And well, you're still there today in a different form.
Yeah. So I did a few more years in service management, but what I did was I was interested in how you can, you know, facilitate and enforce best practice. So I moved into a European team that was developing the service management tool set. So it was Maximo was the strategic tool in the day. So I started to work for the software team who were developing the service management tool. So taking my process sort of experience and actually trying to get the tool to bed that in. So I spent a few years there, and then the strategic direction in IBM was to offshore a lot of the service management roles. So the opportunities were getting sort of narrower and narrower, and we were having a career discussion, and they gave me the options were apparent where I could retrain and stay in IBM in a different role and profession, or if I wanted to stay in service management roles, really it was to leave and find different companies that had sort of onshore roles for service management leadership. And that was sort of the next real big decision, you know, the choice I had to make. So my options was project manager, IT architect, or continuing service management. So I sort of thought through it all, and the one I decided to focus on was IT architecture, because my thinking was I wanted to go down a technical route. I quite liked the technical side of service management anyway, but also I felt if I, you know, went down that path and it didn't go as I wanted, I could always come back to service management with more technical skills, which would help me be a better service manager or sit in service management area, because if you can match the process and the technical aspects, then I think that's the nirvana, the balance. So I sort of retrained as an IT architect, and that's the sort of the role I'm doing now. I've been doing that for the last sort of 4 years.
Okay, it's really interesting, because I guess from your perspective there, you're coming out of the second career that you've known, if we consider the time in Hackney as your first career, you're coming out of that sort of service management focused career. You've now got a family, so you're no longer making that decision just for yourself. You're making it on behalf of your family. There's obviously a lot to think about there, and because I mean I'll be honest, I've never done anything other than types of service management. So for me, that would be a massive choice. I would probably blow my mind.
It was a real big choice, because where we were, like you're consulting in service management, and within IBM as it was, we were sort of thought leaders. We were writing processes, we were defining strategies. I was at the end of it, I was owning incident management across the UK. So I was thought leader from an experience point of view. And then I went into architecture, and it was like I was the apprentice, it was a big, drop down where people asked me loads of questions every day. I was asking other people loads of questions every day. So it was a real steep learning curve, and that was quite frightening in its own respect. But I had some good mentors at the time, and John, one of my mentors when I was first an architect, still my mentor now, we still work together, but he taught me to get used to that feeling of not quite knowing everything, because that's natural, that's sort of the growth area. So when you feel a bit uncomfortable and you feel like you don't know as much as you should, that's when you're in the growth area. And apparently that's normal for architects, where you don't quite know everything, because it's such a broad sort of expanse, and the level of detail you need to go in different areas. So I'm trying to get used to that feeling of knowing a lot but not enough in all the areas.
I think that's really when Mary and I were talking, we were talking about how I held Marion up in terms of my opinion of Marion as a help desk analyst, and my help desk manager was, wow, I want to do what she does. Yeah. And Marion said, but it wasn't exactly what you were thinking. It was very difficult. There were moments of stress. And I guess that, from your perspective, is so brave to accept that. And I think there's a couple of good points that I think are worth hanging on to there. Is that choice to, and IBM, I know, is very good at helping you do this, but that choice to put your trust into a mentor, I think for anybody on their career journey, if you can find a mentor, and indeed somebody to mentor, I think that's incredibly rewarding and really help develop you. And I think what you were saying then as well about that growth space, I think that's what you called it. It's so true. I think that's the, for me, being self-employed, the only person that's going to help me grow is me. And I'm going to be working in organizations where I may know about my area of expertise, but I don't know about the organization. I don't know about its makeup, and I need to grow that knowledge. And I think, you know, your move is incredibly brave, but that element of having to grow, no matter where you are in your career, is healthy and challenging, but can also ultimately be quite scary if you've not experienced it before. And and now you're making a career out of that.
When I worked in the Metropolitan Police, there was an old seasoned detective who said to me once, he said, he goes, you need two people's advice, keep learning and read a good newspaper every day. That's what he said, you know, the only things I can tell you. And it's quite true. You just got to keep learning, you've got to keep putting yourself on courses, finding out new things. And, you know, definitely in technology, there's new things happening all the time. So, you know, the technology changes, it moves on. So, you know, there's always things to learn.
Absolutely.
And I think I'd always back myself to learn. So I'm not afraid of the changing, because I think I always back myself to learn. I'll pick it up. It's just how long it'll take.
Yeah. It's being open to it, isn't it? It can take inordinately longer if you close yourself off and don't accept that you need to learn something or you need to grow, and which is a perfectly normal human emotion. It's almost a fear of the unknown. But I think you're absolutely right. It's backing yourself, and you know who else is going to back us apart from ourselves? You know, we've got to go and give it a go, haven't we? And I think that for me is something that when I look back over all the choices that I've made, it's ultimately come down to me saying, can you do it? It might be a stretch, but why not give it a go? Yeah. And I've not got all of those decisions right, but I think the majority, being sat here today, proves that the majority have been at least partially correct.
Yeah. I might be hopelessly misquoting him, but I think it was Richard Branson who said, get the job and then learn how to do it.
Yeah, I think you could be right. Yeah. And I think that's ever so true, unless you are, you know, well, I guess it's true in any job, in fairness, but that there are people that we hold up in, I was about to sort of name a role, but I'll refrain from that, from people that are doing certain roles, but I guess it, you know, it does apply to everybody, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So in terms of, you know, having made that choice, how's that panning out? So you say you've been doing it for 4 years now. Have you maybe gone less asking so many questions to being asked more questions, or does it remain that you are comfortable with being, you know, incredibly knowledgeable in the process area and you're bringing that up to speed, or are they about on a par now? How's that working out?
Yeah, so I still ask lots of questions in lots of areas. So what I found about architecture is you need to know a certain amount of detail in everything, and you specialize in one particular area, but it's knowing when you need to call in the true SME. So if I'm doing a piece, my project has got a networking aspect, I know enough about networks to do a high level sort of design, and then I'll have to go and get the finer detail or the more complex pieces from a networks SME. So it's knowing enough about, you know, the different domains, technical domains, and then knowing when to ask for the finer details. So the process background has helped me, because documentation was a strong point in what we did. So architecture is a lot about documentation, and also part of our role back in service management, it's all about explaining and training, saying something in a different way so that it resonates with the person you're trying to coach. And it's the same with architecture. So, you know, for, I need to explain it to technical stakeholders, and then financial stakeholders, and then business stakeholders. So those skills sort of carry across, where good documentation helps, but also the ability to explain something in different ways to different people is like what we used to do in service management. But it's so those skills have carried across. Where it doesn't help me is where I have to sort of size and shape servers and plug network together and things like that. You know, that's all the stuff I've been learning and developing, you know, with my colleagues. But I have started to coach or mentor a new architect into our team. So so I'm just helping her along, you know, showing her how I came into it from a non-technical role, and quick shortcuts into knowing what you need to know, which courses to go on, and which bits are the bit. I suppose a bit I found the hardest was knowing where that level was. You know, how much networks do you need to know? How much storage knowledge do you need to have? That was the unknown for me, but I'm sort of comfortable in those sort of areas now. So,
I see. And with regards to the mentoring, I mean, I personally really enjoy doing that. I feel maybe I've arrived at a point in my career where I've got something to give back. I'm trying to refrain from age, but there's definitely an element of age and experience in there. Do you feel the same about mentoring in terms of, you know, choosing to mentor? It is quite a, in my opinion at least, it's quite a choice from the perspective of you want to make sure you're giving good advice in a good way that helps somebody progress. Do you find it a rewarding thing to do?
I do, and I think anyone can do it at any level, because again, I heard this a while back and it's really stood with me. The best way to learn is you watch someone, you do one, and then you explain to someone else how to do it, and that cements your knowledge. So the first one, you watch someone, say, facilitating a meeting, and then you, once you've watched a few, you can facilitate a meeting yourself. And then to really cement your knowledge and your best practice is you teach somebody else how to facilitate a meeting. And so I think doing that at any level in wherever you are, if you can explain to somebody else what it is you're doing, it sort of proves that you know it and you understand it, because you're able to relay it to somebody else. So what I'm doing now is I'm sort of cementing the architectural approach or the knowledge, because I'm telling somebody else how I do it. And sometimes I course correct as I'm explaining to them, because actually, you know, that reminds me, this is probably the best way to do it. Or they'll ask a question, I say, yeah, good question, let's tweak that, because you're right. You know, so you can hone your own sort of best practice by explaining what you do to somebody else, because there'll always be new stuff you're learning. You know, it's never, you're always learning, as you know, what you did might have been the right way to do it 6 months ago, but something's changed now, so you got to adapt and sort of course correct a bit.
Yeah, there's I always think about a client I used to work with called Pearson. Their tagline is always learning.
Yeah.
When I was working with a gentleman named Johan Bofa, he introduced me to a quote, which was learn, unlearn, and relearn. Because like you say, something always changes. So whatever you've learned, you've got to unlearn it and relearn. And I think that there are so many layers to that, but you know, simplistically, that's exactly what it is, especially working in technology. You know, in my case, I would not say I am a technology worker. I am a service worker, but I facilitate that service through the use of technology. So it changes. And I guess you've probably gone a bit more down the tech route, but you're using those service elements to help you deliver that just as much. And I was just thinking to myself, I bet you'd be a change manager's dream as well, with regards to and making sure all the CIs are taken care of and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I don't know, because when it's like poacher come gamekeeper, so I know which parts of the process bend.
Brilliant. That's a very good point. So in terms of, you know, we're sat here today, we've got sort of 10 minutes or so to go. What's next? What's the next choice on the horizon, if any?
Yeah, so sort of, you know, as you said, like when we were both sort of coming through IBM, sort of both got married. I've got a couple of kids, and they're sort of approaching the end of education now. So they're finding their own feet and doing going off on their own sort of directions. So I'm a bit freer with my choices as to what I do. To be honest, I always sort of steered away from the leave home on Monday, sort of come back on Thursday night sort of jobs. I wasn't too keen on the traveling. I didn't mind a couple of days away, but not sort of long term. And I still don't think I'm interested in those types of jobs. I prefer sort of less commute, more work type jobs. But I'm really enjoying architecture. I suppose the choice is whether at the moment, I work for one client and I'm with them. So I've been with them for 4 years. So it's, a long-term relationship, and whether I go and do different things. So I suppose at the moment, as sort of IBM separated out into two companies, and my side of it, the delivery side, are a brand new company now, sort of called Kindrel, and there's massive opportunities there. It's all brand new. It's a brand new company. There's lots of change. Lots of new teams forming and new things, new areas that they're moving into. So, I'll see what happens from that regard. Quite happy with how it's sort of developing. So, we'll see what happens, whether I move into more a central team again in a big organization like Kindrel and work across different accounts doing different things with them, or whether there's loads to do with our current client, so there's lots of work there, or whether I change. Yeah, and that's the bit I liked about IBM, and I like it at Kindrel, is that there's opportunities without having to change the badge too many times.
It's funny. I think we obviously caught up just before we came on air, and I was saying to you, I still work to a lot of the stuff that I learned at IBM in the formative years of my career. And I do harbour a slight regret that, in terms of my choices, that I either didn't stay or never came back.
Yeah.
Because opportunities did present themselves. And I think for me, I'd still one day love to go back to IBM, but it's probably the IBM as I remember it, which is probably nothing like it is today. Because like you say, it's massive and there's so many opportunities and so much change. And it probably would definitely not be anything like I remember it, but I have such fond memories of not just the teams we worked with, but the opportunities we were given, the going to the business school and just learning so much more than just IT. This was about how to present, how to facilitate, how to do things that I do every day now that I'm entirely sure I wouldn't be doing without having worked at IBM. And I think it's a great company. And it's so good to hear from your perspective that even having been there for what's coming up, I think 24 years, there's still that opportunity, there's still that excitement, there's still the ability to go and do something that's gonna get you out of bed in the morning, basically, and get you to go and do that long day, and keep you in that zone of learning. I think that's it's a massive. Massive compliment to the company.
I think that's what gives it the longevity, is that it's challenging every day and there's stuff to learn. If you've got to that air and you're coasting and there's no challenge and there isn't anything to learn, that's when I think you're in trouble and it'll be a decline after that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's so big and such a world leader that there's always going to be stuff to learn there. So I mean, if we now sort of coming towards a close, if you could go back to that day that we met in Brentford and give yourself some advice, or say to yourself, this is going to come up and maybe don't do that, or maybe you should do this, is there anything you'd say to yourself on that day that may slightly alter the path, or just settle the nerves on that first day, anything at all?
I suppose the one big trip I never did was I never went to the Indian call centers. So And anyway, it was a bit of timing and a bit of the ask, really, where they really wanted us to go to for 5 or 6 weeks so they could get the most out of us out there. And that never actually fitted in with sort of personal life, really, to leave the wife for 6 weeks and say, see you later, I'll be back. Look after the kids, I'll be back in 6 weeks. But I would have liked to try to get out to the Indian call centres and experience the cut and thrust over there. I think that would have been really good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something I've never been able to do. I had so many opportunities with different sort of roles, and it never quite, there was, like I say, it was always a bit of timing issue. I've managed to work with so many great people from those call centres, and yeah, it's always been, even now, I'm working with people over there, and it's always something that I'd like to try and do too, just to go in. And also, I think just to get back to a service desk environment, I was actually at a call centre on Wednesday with my current client, and I recall that buzz of taking a phone call and being able to influence somebody's day every 2.5 minutes, hopefully positively influence it, because they were never calling to say, hi, how are you? How's your day? There was always a problem at the end of the phone waiting for you. But I do miss that. Do you ever reflect back on those calls, and do they ever serve you in your day-to-day work today?
Yeah. I said one thing I learned from help desk is the questioning. And, you know, one of the main principles of architecture is to ask loads of questions, because you have to understand it up front, because if you find out something halfway down your solution, then there's far more rework. So all of those questioning skills, you know, the problem determination questions we ask when we were trained as help desk analysts, you know, try and work out exactly what they're doing and where that problem is, because then it leads you down the right area to investigate. And I think that's true across a lot of professions. The more questions you ask, get your understanding accurate, you know, don't assume something, ask the question, clarify it, because saves you time if you ask the questions up front.
I think that is a really good note to end on, which is, as you say, don't assume, ask the question and clarify. Don't be afraid to ask the question, because it's always very useful to clarify, as you say. So I think that's a really good piece of advice. Well, I think, Derek, that is the longest in my memory that we've ever gone without discussing football. And yes. So that's good for the viewers. Otherwise, it could have been rather boring for anybody that's not into Liverpool or Tottenham. So there you go, I've done that now. But I just want to thank you ever so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's been great to catch up and chat and learn about your choices. I'll be joined, I hope, next time by Nick Evans, who is our help desk manager at Brentford. Nick will join me to discuss the choices that led him to managing that help desk and what's gone on since. But thanks ever so much. I really appreciate your time. And thank you to everybody that's either tuned in live or will tune in to the recording. It's really great to have your support. And thanks to Martin for interacting with us with regards to your time at IBM. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for tuning into It's All About Choices. Thanks, Derek.
Cheers, Dave. Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Bye-bye.